Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, coming to you high atop the middle of the country, Denver, Colorado, 5,280 feet, looking down on all you people. And it's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I'm joined in studio, as is usually the case, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Looking forward to hearing some bumpers from her this week as we go forward. Generally more interesting than anything I have to say. Just wondering what she's going to play. But I want to start out right off the bat out of the war file. As reported by Stars and Stripes, this past week, the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force have changed policies to allow female service members to wear previously banned hairstyles. That's correct. While Boko Haram, ISIS, and Hamas continue to rampage across the world stage, a DOD-wide hairstyle policy review was directed by Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. Chuck! excuse me there. Female soldiers can now wear two-strand twists, larger braids, cornrows, and twists, and ponytails. Unless, of course, they've been kidnapped by Boko Haram. Female soldiers can wear female sailors, not to be confused with female soldiers. We already covered those. Female sailors can wear two-strand twists and multiple braids that hang freely above the collar. Unless, of course, they've been sold into slavery by ISIS. Female airmen can now wear two-strand twists, French twists, and Dutch braids. Unless, of course, Hamas rockets land on their tent or they've been beheaded. The Marine Corps has not yet completed its review. Heaven help us. The Marine Corps is actually taking part in the review. Yet I was somewhat encouraged that the Marine Corps wasn't included in that very first sentence. But they're just being more deliberative about the hairstyle review going on in the military that you and I rely on against the forces that would lead civilization into 1,000 years of darkness, back to the Middle Ages, the Islamists. Okay. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because that was very disturbing to see what our military is doing, frittering away their time while the world falls deeper and deeper into darkness, destruction. And neo-Nazi, Islamo-Nazi, pagan rule in various parts of the world. You want to just keep going in the war file? Because it gets pretty depressing here. But let's get these depressing stories out of the way right off the bat. That way we don't have to feel so bad when we start reading about what's going on here in America. Yeah, it'll seem not so bad once we talk about... Well, we've got a story here from the Daily Mail. Friday through Saturday, over 300 Yazidis were allegedly murdered and their families abducted by the Islamic State militants, Islamo-Nazis. Boko Haram had kidnapped at least 50 more, while approximately 80-some-odd men and women and children were rescued by the Chad military. I said that, yes, the Chadian military. For those of you who were even aware that there was a country called Chad, it's a desperately dirt-poor country in Africa, and they managed to rescue some 80-85 of Boko Haram's victims. Meanwhile, all the superpowers of the West, all the NATO powers are impotent to do anything. We're relying on Chad. No consolation to the kidnap victims. Over 300 Yazidis murdered, men murdered, and the women and children were abducted to be sold into slavery, as is the custom of the Arab raider ever since the days of Joseph in the book of Genesis. See, we have a quote here from a Tory minister of parliament in Britain. He says that the present violence taking place in Iraq and Syria at the hands of the Islamic State, he says, this feels like the beginning of a civil war, unquote, says the Minister of Parliament there. But he's incorrect. We would point out here on the Worldview that this is not the beginnings of a civil war. No, sir, this is a civilizational war. Civilizational, yes. It's Islam versus everyone else, primarily Christians and Jews. But they'll kill just about anyone, as they've proven with the Yazidis. But this is a civilizational war. And this brought to mind something I've noticed in my amateur study of history over the years, is that civilizational wars tend to take place with the East versus the West, or the West versus the East. The great civilizational struggles throughout history, at least the modern era, take place between the East and West. I note Islam versus Christendom, the Soviets versus the Western democracies. But civil wars tend to take place North versus South. You go back to Israel, of course, the American Civil War. Anyway, just an observation I've noticed. And this latest episode, this eruption of violence from Islam and the Nazis associated with Islam against the rest of the world, this is a civilizational struggle. The East versus the West, Islam versus, well, what's left of Christendom, which can hardly be called Christendom anymore. This same minister of parliament said that he believed it would be very difficult to secure public and parliamentary support for UK airstrikes after the experience of the aftermath of the 2003 Iraq invasion by Britain and the United States. Very, very difficult to secure support for even airstrikes. Bloke. Yes, indeed. Bush and Blair squandered the last vestiges of Western credibility and will a decade ago with their hollow strategy of infusing Iraq with humanism and democracy. A losing strategy, Mr. Blair and Mr. Bush. Why didn't they think of building Christian missions? Because they're not Christians. They're just humanists, post-Christian humanists, secularists. Bush and Blair. Thank you very much, Bush and Blair, and I'm sure there were others involved. And we'll get to all of you eventually. So that's the latest crisis as the Army analyzes braid styles and double twists. Are they double twists? I'm sorry. Two-strand twists. There, now approved in the Army. From the culture file, the British Office of National Statistics last week made it official. The most popular name in the United Kingdom of newborn babies is Mohammed. Yeah, it's Mohammed. And that's in England, by the way. Yeah. Now, this has actually been going on for some time. Mohammed has been the most popular language by many counts for several years. But according to Breitbart, much of the mainstream media focus on the official data as listed in the results. And that official data breaks up the three most popular spellings of the name Mohammed. And so if you observe the statistics just as they're published, well, then Mohammed looks like it's either 15th or 23rd or 57th. But that's only because they've broken out the different spellings of the same name, Mohammed. If you add all the three most popular spellings together, Mohammed is number one. It beat out, what was the second most popular name? Let me see here. No, it wasn't Raheem or Abdul. It was something not all that surprising, as a matter of fact. Oliver. Yeah, now that sounds like, yeah, that should be second most popular in England. Oliver, that's fine. But anyway, the way the media reports it, they ignore the multiple entries. So Breitbart reports that in previous years, media outlets in Britain have not aggregated the various spellings and have only published the top 20 names, which makes it seem like traditional names remain dominant. So when you break out the three spellings, Mohammed only makes it once in the top 20, and that's at number 15. But in reality, it is the most popular name. For boys, 7,445 boys were named Mohammed in Britain in 2013, the last year that we have data. Yes, that Muslims are the only ones in England having children. And so, yes, as a matter of fact, Breitbart reports that since 2002, the number of Muslims in Britain has doubled. And that's because the Muslims are having children, right? Whereas the British girls are getting tattoos and vomiting all over themselves while clubbing. Yeah, that's what's happening to Western civilization. Uh-huh. Yep, Western civilization went and got a tattoo, caught VD, and then puked on itself at 3 in the morning. That's the state of things. Now, should we talk about Ferguson, Missouri? I haven't even printed out a single story. Let me just go through here for my Ferguson report, because I really don't have anything to report. We don't really know what happened there. I may get back to it later. But we just don't know what happened, and so I'm trepidatious to even comment on it. Heaven knows I don't want to instigate any more looting or fires, or I don't want to cause any more store owners to have to build up parapets and assume a defensive position and lay down grazing fire. That's not what we do here at the Worldview. So instead, let's keep moving deeper into the war file. Shannon Conley is a 19-year-old American, and she is charged with conspiracy to provide support to the Islamic State. Yeah, that's the Islamo-Nazis who call themselves the Islamic State. You remember, where's this story from? This is from the Israel National News. Guess where the dateline is? Arvada, Colorado. Yes, Shannon providing material support to ISIS. From her mom's house in Arvada, Colorado. What's that?
What?
I know, it's bizarre. I drive through Arvada at least once a week. So I just didn't know that there would be any Islamists there, but apparently Shannon is there. She lived with her mom and dad, I think. Well, no, what are the odds her parents are together? Pretty much zero. Let's see. We may find that here in the story somewhere. She was arrested in July when she tried to board a flight to Turkey so she could join the Islamic State. She attended middle school in Loveland, Colorado, and then Arvada West High School. It's just so bizarre. I drive by there every week. She was first picked up on the FBI's radar, according to the Israel National News, when she was attending Faith Bible Chapel in Arvada, where she wore Islamic garb. I know. And started acting like a terrorist. So people reported her as a terrorist, and the FBI apparently looked at her computer and found out that, she had a number of CDs and DVDs labeled Anwar al-Awlaki. You remember him. He's the ever-popular Colorado-educated terrorist mastermind who was assassinated by a U.S. drone in Yemen, allegedly. As far as we know, he was assassinated. We hope that's true. Conley was living with her parents, look at that, plural, in their Arvada home. That's unusual that you've got an Arvada home with two parents in it. That's the surprising part of the story. Two parents in Arvada that are still married? I only knew a couple of couples in Arvada that are still married. Anyways, let's see. Was there anything interesting here? It has been estimated that at least 50 U.S. citizens are fighting in Syria against Assad alongside the likes of the Islamic State and other Islamo-fanatic Nazi groups. And there are concerns that these Americans, along with other European counterparts, are liable to bring terrorism back to the United States once the war is over in Iraq. That is concerning. And the war's not far from over in Iraq. I think it's just a matter of a short period of time, unless something changes dramatically, before the Islamic State wins the war in Iraq and, in fact, institutes, well, the caliphate. Call it what you want. The Islamic State. It's amazing how the simplest little riff on the guitar can just sound so good. Doesn't have to be complicated. Anyway, put those guitars away. It's time to get back. That's right. I was quoting Angus Young, as a matter of fact. By the way, for your information, Arvada West High School is the home of the Wildcats. That gives a whole new meaning. For the mascot out there at Arvada West. All right, let me get back out of this web page where I was looking up the mascot of Arvada West. Turns out to be the Wildcats, oddly enough. But we're not going to go any further with that. We're going to move right on here. Let's see. We'll go from Arvada over to Denver. It's from the politics file. Breitbart is reporting that the smell of growing marijuana is now filling Denver's air as the indoor pot farms bring an acrid, skunky smell to the city and draw complaints from the residents. Hey, I'm telling you, I walked into an office building downtown Denver last week. The elevator reeked of marijuana, literally reeked. And this is, I'll bet you rent in any one of the offices in this building is at least $1,200 a month for a downtown Denver reeked of marijuana. Yeah. And now back to this story. People are complaining, apparently. They say that the smell of growing marijuana smells quite different from that of a bakery or any of the other usual smells that a business might emit. Yes, different than a bakery. Now, a bakery emits a pleasant smell, generally, as do delis and pizza joints. Yeah, bars don't, though. Bars kind of smell like ashtrays and old beer. Well, not ashtrays anymore.
No, that's after 2 o'clock
anymore. Maybe after. Well, then, yeah, but you can't smoke in the bars anymore. I mean, unless you're smoking pot, probably. You walk around downtown Denver. You cannot walk around downtown Denver after dark in any of the areas that have clubs or restaurants or any social activity. The place reeks of pot smoke. Just reeks of it. But good news, USA Today reports that tests for air quality in Denver do not seem to indicate any violation of the city's clean air ordinances. No matter how bad, the city reeks of acrid, skunky pot smoke. At least we're not violating the clean air ordinances. And so all is well. All is well, and there's no reason to worry. Last April, Breitbart reports one indoor pot-growing facility in Denver suffered an explosion during an accident involving the use of butane to extract THC oil from the pot plants. Three people were seriously injured in the explosion, but there was no violation of the city's clean air ordinances. And so none of them had to go to the hospital because there was no violation. All right. So it's becoming a joke. I had to travel this week out of town. I had to go out to Chicago, Illinois, America's second city. And I did not have a single interaction with another human being in which the topic of marijuana did not come up. Every time they brought it up with a snicker and a chuckle and a wink. And a, you can't have a conversation if you're from Denver, if you go anywhere. You might as well just be prepared to discuss marijuana because it comes up.
You didn't get pulled over just because you
have... I didn't get pulled over, but I have heard that they want to... I was actually concerned about getting pulled over. And not only due to the fact that I was speeding and that I violated several left-turn prohibitions. Well, I didn't speed in Chicago. It's physically impossible to speed in Chicago unless you have a fighter jet. You can't speed in Chicago. It took me 11 minutes to go one block downtown Chicago in a cab. It was very frustrating with the pedestrians. Okay, but now I'm getting off topic. Anyway, it was just, it's embarrassing to not be able to interact with other human beings without them asking, so how's the pot working out there in Colorado, man? It's hilarious. Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious. Yeah, thanks. Okay. You're real original, you know? All right. I've had conversations with nurses, doctors, medical professionals, PhDs, scientists. They all wanted to talk about the pot in Colorado. It's so hilarious.
It is.
We are a laughing stock, so there you have it. All right. Now, let's see. Speaking of Chicago, although I don't think this is from Chicago. This story is, I don't know where it's from. Let's just read it. WUSA Channel 9 sent a reporter out to report on an app, a new app that reportedly identifies sketchy neighborhoods. There's an app for everything. I don't know what the app is called. I was trying to get the name here of the app. Anyway... This app supposedly will identify sketchy neighborhoods, and it will warn you if you're entering into a sketchy neighborhood, supposedly. So they wanted to find out, so they took the app out into a Washington, D.C. community and began interviewing residents who live there, asking them, is this a sketchy neighborhood? Because this app says that this is a sketchy neighborhood. So the residents, of course, when they were being interviewed, they were like, no, it's a good neighborhood. It's a great neighborhood. It's a quiet neighborhood. It's a wonderful neighborhood. Well, while they were getting all this good news about the neighborhood from the inhabitants there and how there's not much criminal activity that ever happens, while that was being told to the reporters, their van was being robbed. She says, we got back to the van. I'm sorry, he said. What's the name of this reporter? Mola Lengi. I thought that would be a girl. Mola? Mola Lengi. What's the deal, by the way? Are there any more just average reporters named Larry or Dave? How come they're all this ethnically ambiguous, sexually ambiguous? It's not only you can't tell where they're from anymore. You can't hardly tell if they're boys or girls anymore. I
have one of those.
Names. Yeah, there is. There's several of them, and they're getting more and more.
I mean, my name isn't like that, so I have.
Well, no, I mean your name. Well, yeah, your name is a bit odd. But you're not on TV. Anyway, I thought Mola Lengi was a girl. Turns out Mola's a boy. Okay. But either way, Mola was robbed while he was being told how good the neighborhood was. Their van was robbed. They say they got back to the van and the lock was popped out. All their stuff was gone. A backpack full of electronics. Yep, the photographer had two backpacks full of equipment that he had built up over a 15-year career. It was all robbed. Yeah. Okay. So I guess the Sketchy Neighborhood app is fairly accurate. So if you want to download that one, it might help if you're ever visiting Denver or Chicago or Washington, D.C., obviously. Whoever put that app together, well, it sounds like they knew what they were doing. Oh, let's see. The intern who was with them, her iPhone was stolen, but the crew was able to use her Find My iPhone app to track its location, but they were too scared to go get it. No, they found all the empty duffel bags in a dumpster along with the iPhone. So there you have it, Sketchy. They don't give the name of the app, which I don't understand. You'd think that they would put the name of the app. But they don't say, and now I want the app. Okay, let's move on. We'll go, before we take a break, let's go into the science, really, file. So this is a story about God, by the way. So if you're averse to that, you can hit fast forward, turn it off, go take a bathroom break, whatever. But this is a story about the living God. Google's satellites could soon see your face from space, according to motherboard.com. The first commercial satellite set to capture 25-centimeter high-resolution images has been launched by Digital Globe. Yep, they launched it last Wednesday. The name of the satellite is the WorldView 3. The WorldView 3, are they going to be paying us royalties? We really need to trademark that. This is getting out of hand. The WorldView 3 will be able to capture images at high resolution down to 25 square centimeters. And now that's flat out amazing. Google, Microsoft, NASA, and numerous other federal agencies, they want the images, of course, so Digital Globe will do pretty well. Digital Globe, by the way, are the guys who took pictures of the top of Osama bin Laden's head there in Abbottabad and then sent them over to whoever killed him, allegedly. Anyway, they say that Google will soon be able to see manholes and mailboxes due to this Digital Globe satellite. And then they go on to freak out about privacy and all that. I just want to remind everyone that God can already see you in real time and in high resolution, even down to the hair on your head, if he wants to. Now, of course, Digital Globe, Google, Microsoft, NASA, the numerous federal agencies, they're not these players. Well, they're not righteous like God is. So it's hard to trust them with high-resolution images of your face from space. But, I mean, God can already see you, and he's rolling tape. He's going to have tape of everything. He's going to be able to replay it all. So I just want to ask you to ask yourself, are you okay with God watching you? Or do you feel like it's a violation of your privacy? So glad to have you aboard this week as we plow forward into the news of the week and all that and everything else. So do we want to talk about Ferguson, Missouri? No, maybe I'll get to it later. You know what I want to talk to you about? As I'm driving across country from Chicago on Saturday, trying to get home, I'm listening to a repeat of Glenn Beck's program. In between, by the way, I listened to all of the Nehemiah Bible study and the first section of the Book of Acts Bible study from Denver Bible Church. Highly, highly recommend you download those. The Nehemiah Bible study, if 1,000 years from now, archaeologists only found Bob Enyart's Nehemiah Bible study, They could reconstitute the entire Bible and a biblical worldview from that one Bible study. One of the best Bible studies in the history of all Bible studies. I know, Nehemiah, right? Who would have thunk? But it's really phenomenal. Who would have thunk that? Yeah. Nehemiah, yeah, check that one out. But anyway, I was checking in on the news once in a while, and I happened to catch Glenn Beck talking about how hard it is to do talk radio. Him and his yuckmeisters, the other schmucks, I'm not supposed to say schmuck. His sidekicks who laugh at his jokes on that show, they're like you, my dear, except they're less talented. Far less attractive, obviously. Anyway, they're yucking it up. But Glenn goes on and on, him and his buddies there, for about 5 minutes of how hard it is to do talk radio. It's just the hardest. I've never had a job that was so hard. After the first 3 months, I came home and told my wife, I don't think I can do it. I might have to quit. They said the callers. Oh, the callers are brutal. Boy, you've got to be on your, you better have your act together. You better be well informed, because it's so hard. The callers, oh, they're brutal. And then they went and told a story of how they got caught short one broadcast, and they basically had no material. So what they decided to do was to throw out a highly provocative question. They tried to come up with the most provocative question they could, and they thought, well, we'll throw that out to the audience, and then we'll just ride callers for the hour. And I thought to myself, well, Glenn, which is it? Are callers difficult? Or when you don't have anything to say, do you try to ride the callers for an hour? That's why we don't take calls on this show. I've noticed over the years listening to talk radio that the callers usually just interfere with the host's ability to be a talented radio figure. I don't appreciate callers. That's why I don't rely on you people to carry me for an hour. I mean, if you can't sit in front of a microphone and talk in an educated fashion and be entertaining for an hour, just 1 hour. I mean, I can do it once a week, but I have a full-time job for crying out loud. If all I had to do was the radio, I could probably fall out of bed and do it half asleep. It's not that hard. Glenn Beck made it sound so. Oh, so anyway, they come up with this inflammatory question to throw out to the audience. They throw it out there. Of course, the lines are filled up. And then the phones went dead. All the callers dropped off, and they were sitting there with nothing except a microphone and 41 minutes to fill. And they somehow stumbled through it, and at the end they said it was the most embarrassing experience of their life, and they can't believe that they actually did that on WABC, which is a reputable radio station in New York, apparently. Anyway, I found it amusing because I thought to myself, if you're Glenn Beck and your worldview is what it is, then I can see how it might be difficult to do an hour of radio and be educating and entertaining and appear to have your act together. Because, well, Glenn Beck doesn't have a traditional Christian worldview. He's a Mormon and he's a pagan, and he's also very confused about some of the most fundamental issues that undergird the success of Western civilization and Christianity and all of that. And I don't mean to slam Glenn Beck. I mean, he makes $300 million a year, so I don't know that he would be all that interested in my opinion of him. But I find it entertaining, because every talk show host that I've listened to, without exception, at one point or another, does a soliloquy on how difficult it is to do talk radio. And I just think it's fairly easy. In fact, if I ever wired this whole setup for phones and I took calls, I'd probably get bored and quit after a while. All right, now, moving on from that, my analysis of Glenn Beck, was there anything else I had to say about that? Well, anyway, I ended up flipping Glenn Beck off I didn't flip him off. I mean, I turned him off about 4 minutes into his diatribe on how hard his life was. Spinning records and then trying to talk on the radio. And listen to the Bible study of the book of Acts, which is just tremendous. Tremendous. I recommend you download it, buy it. It's a bargain at twice the price.
Don't you think Paul?
No.
Paul's life was
Yeah, I'm sure the Apostle Paul would be like, "Oh, Glenn, you have it so hard. Your life is so difficult. Do you ever get a blister on your finger from spinning those records? Flip. Those sliders can be difficult. Oh, and you had to answer questions about politics on the radio. Oh, Glenn, it's so difficult." All right. Now, what we were just talking about, some people watching you from space and who you can trust and who you cannot trust. Can you trust God to be watching you from space, or are you uncomfortable with that? Well, I think it's a natural human condition to be uncomfortable with it, you know, because we're all fallen. We're all imperfect. We all fall short. We all sin. So I can understand being uncomfortable with it, at least initially. But hopefully in your life, you get more and more comfortable with the idea that God is watching you all the time. He sees everything you do, and he'll remember everything you do that he chooses to remember. And with that, we're going to move on to someone who has a very high level of agitation over who might be watching him or have a camera on him or be recording him, and that's Rand Paul. You know, Rand Paul is he's considered some sort of libertarian Renaissance man, and I haven't known what to think about Rand Paul. I agree with him on some things. I disagree with him on some things. But overall, I think he's a decent human being. I mean, for a senator. And he's not a lawyer. He's a surgeon. As a matter of fact, as we go to air, he's somewhere in the third world doing eye surgeries for free for poor people. And I mean, there's not a lawyer on the planet who can even touch that. Not even close. So Rand Paul is not a lawyer. So that puts him at the top of my list of potential politicians that I could support. Just the fact that he's not a lawyer. Well, a report from the Examiner says that Rand Paul appears to be positioning himself for a potential run at the White House. And we all know that's been going on for quite some time. And in an interview, he has taken a strong stance in support of a personhood amendment and the outlawing of abortion. I find it interesting that the Examiner online views this strong stand he's taken in support of the right to life of innocent people. They take that as positioning himself for a potential run at the White House. And this goes to the heart of what many in the leadership of the personhood movement have been saying for the past 8 years or so, is that if we would stop compromising and tell these politicians what to do, because they need someone to tell them what to do. Politicians are not inherently moral people. They're like lawyers. In fact, most of them are lawyers who tend to gravitate toward ungodly, sinful, destructive behavior. So these people need guidance. From who? Well, from the religious leaders, from the Christians. And leadership in the personhood movement has been saying, let's stop compromising on the inalienable right to life of every innocent person. Let's stop compromising on that and demand equal personhood for all the innocent. And then maybe one politician will realize that we're telling them the right thing to do, and maybe he'll do it. And this is a fine example. As Rand Paul positions himself for a potential run at the White House, what is the first thing he does? He stands up and takes a strong stance in support of personhood. They report that during an interview last weekend, Rand Paul spoke about the right of a fetus and the importance of personhood. He said, quote, "It's a big issue for me. I tell people that really it's all about when life begins." He stated that a fetus should have the same rights as a newborn child. And he said, "Furthermore, I don't think a civilization can long endure that doesn't respect the rights of the unborn." Now, I can't disagree with any of that. In fact, I wanted to stand up and cheer when I read this article. Now, is Rand Paul telling us the truth? Well, time will tell. But seeing as he's not a lawyer, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And the article does note that Rand Paul has also voiced strong opposition to the drug war. In fact, he's expressed opposition to laws against drugs that are currently illegal. And he has obviously spoken out on the National Security Agency and privacy and spying and all of that. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know that I have some disagreements with Rand in these particular areas. But I'll give him all that. I mean, he can legalize drugs. He can be for that, I should say. And he can stand up and be against the National Security Agency and the fact that the government is collecting data on all of us all the time. I'm willing to give him all that if he comes out. If he comes out for personhood, then I would stand four square behind him despite our disagreements on these other secondary, more minor issues. All right. Now, finally, from the Examiner, the journalist who wrote this article just couldn't help himself. He had to insert his own editorial opinion in the final paragraph of what is otherwise a well-balanced and well-done report. This particular urinalist writing for the Examiner urinates the following. The issue over abortion rights is often a personal one, where there is no right or wrong answer, says the reporter. Well, Rand Paul says there is a right answer, and it's that a fetus in the womb should have the same rights as a newborn child. So I don't know where the reporter comes off with. I guess he just couldn't help it. He had to say that because he wanted to be fair and balanced. When someone tells the truth, you can rely on a urinalist or a lawyer to stand up and give equal time to the lie. You can always count on that. So there you have it. Rand Paul, as of now, he's my front runner. I know a lot of my friends are supporting Ben Carson, but I just haven't heard Ben Carson elucidate the idea of personhood yet, and if he does so, then I think he'd be above Rand Paul. Is Ben Carson a lawyer? No. Ben Carson is a neurosurgeon. So I would prefer a doctor over a lawyer, that's all. So, I mean, that's just one of the basic fundamental requirements to get the McBurney vote would be that you're just not a lawyer. So Ben Carson and Rand Paul are the front runners just based on that. And got to hand it to Rand if he's being truthful. And he actually, you know, this is a smart move by Paul because, well, here's the story right here. Evangelicals, according to the Washington Post, are beginning to feel abandoned, left out by the Republican Party. Many social conservatives, according to the Post, say they feel politically isolated as the country seems to be hurtling to the left with dope legal in Colorado, homosexual marriage gaining across the nation. They feel out of place in a GOP increasingly dominated by the Tea Party activists and libertarians who prefer to focus on taxes, the role of government, and often disagree with social conservatives on drugs and homosexuality and immorality and the murder of unborn children and all that stuff. Folks, here's my advice to social conservatives. Leave the politicians at the whorehouse with each other and come home. Exchange your seat amongst the Republicans riding on the back of Babylon the Great whore and come back home and raise your children. Get them out of the schools. Save them out of the culture. Leave the whores in the whorehouse and come back home and get to know your God, because victory in politics is fleeting. But your Christian faith is what will be the sure foundation. Alright, it's the Weekly Worldview. We're rounding third, headed for home. We're running out of time. I was chastised in the break by my extremely attractive audio engineer, who said, basically, she said, so if Rand Paul came out and said he's against stomping on kittens, that you would say that he's the most prominent leader That's basically what he did. He came out and said, look, I'm against murdering people. Well, my dear, unfortunately, the state of American politics, just finding someone who's against butchering innocent babies is difficult. And I know, I agree. It's you barely qualify to be allowed to join into the family of man if you just admit that a baby in the womb should be protected. That's a fundamental requirement just to be called a civilized human being. But there aren't any of those amongst the politicians. So Rand Paul is breaking new ground. What's that?
Compromise.
Well, I'll compromise on the drug laws and the NSA and all of that. I suppose. Man, I thought I was jaded. Wow. Okay. Yeah, I know. It is brutal out there, folks. All right, now, quickly, I want to comment on Ferguson, Missouri, Michael Brown, and all the hullabaloo surrounding all of that. As I said earlier, we just don't know what happened. There's one thing that I do know. I know what did not happen in Ferguson, Missouri. And it's the only thing I'm sure of, so it's the only comment I'm going to make on the situation. I guarantee you that what did not happen was that police officers approached Michael Brown. Michael Brown got down on his knees, raised his hands, and then was shot by the police. I guarantee you that did not happen. That's the only thing I'm certain of, that the police did not shoot Michael Brown while he was on his knees with his hands in the air. I know that didn't happen. There's nothing else I can be sure of. So we'll wait and we'll get back to you as that story develops. Meanwhile, let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina for some good news. Yes, there's been a huge increase in the number of families in North Carolina who have pulled their kids out of the public schools and begun educating them at home. That's right. The number of home schools has jumped about 30% since the 2011-2012 school year. A 30% increase. That's encouraging. As of last year, about 100,000 North Carolina children were homeschooled. And that's, way more than are attending private school. It's significantly more, a couple thousand more than are attending private school. Now, the Urinalist who wrote this story alleges that it's the sputtering economy that's the main reason that families are choosing homeschooling over private schooling. That's probably true. I don't know that I would put that in a story or that it has any relevance. But according to this article, it's Common Core that's one of the main reasons that families are leaving the public schools. Yeah, Common Core. Finally, I suppose if the curriculum and the culture there at the school becomes so repulsive on its face that even the average heathen starts thinking, man, I really would like my kid to know math, you know. They may not understand the Bible or the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, but they would at least like their children to know how to spell. And so Common Core is, you know, the liberals and the leftists and the God-haters, they just tend to overplay their hand every time. They can't help themselves. So they come in with this Common Core that on its face, it repulses almost everybody who looks into it. I mean, unless you're a diehard heathen liberal socialist. So anyway, well, thank you to the left for overplaying their hand. Just like I, you could almost say that to Satan, who overplayed his hand at the crucifixion, right? He couldn't help himself. He thought he had it. Boy, this was it. And his bloodlust was just so, he was so infused with it, he couldn't restrain himself. And he ultimately secured his own demise. And we can only hope that the government school system is securing for itself its own eventual demise as they overplay their hand with such obviously repulsive curriculum. The report, homeschool, this is from EAG News, they report that homeschooling was legalized by the state Supreme Court in North Carolina in 1985. I didn't know homeschooling was ever illegal. Although I think my parents thought that, and I think most parents in the in the 20th century up until the 80s. I think most parents thought it was illegal to keep your kid out of school, although it really wasn't. You just had to be paying attention and know what to do. All right, now, we have an update to reason number 700 and whatever to get your kids out of the government schools. You remember we talked about the book called Your Health Today. Parents were complaining whether or not this health text, allegedly, was age-appropriate. Why? Well, because it included references to, I can't really say what it had references to. So I can't say it. I'm 40-some-odd years old. I can't say it. So age-appropriateness? If a 40-year-old can't say it, it certainly shouldn't be in a high school textbook. It shouldn't be in any book, for crying out loud. What do you mean age-appropriate? Parents were outraged, saying that this book, with references to all kinds of deviant, perverted behavior, may not be age-appropriate for their students. Anyway, the administrators there at the Fremont Unified School District in California are shelving the book temporarily and reverting back to the deviant, perverted textbook they used to teach kids about sex last year. So it's a victory for parents. One hapless parent at the Fremont School District said that she had read the book from start to finish and believed that it, quote, spoke mostly about college kids. It doesn't relate to high school kids at all. I'm thinking, what's wrong with you people? I mean, oh my goodness. Anyway, the administrators at the school have agreed to shelve the text until the concerns of the parents can be further examined. Yes, yes. By the way, a study conducted by Iowa State University found that the average age at which a public school kid starts engaging in sexual activity is 12 years old. That's a study. I don't know. Is that true? Is this what's going on in the government schools? The average age is 12? And that means, according to one associate professor of human development and family studies, that means she teaches kids how to have sex. She says that means some kids are starting at 10 or younger. So she says this book is age appropriate. We need to be teaching 10-year-olds about, subjects that I can't say on the air. I can't even say it.
I never learned anything like that in America.
Yeah, I didn't learn about, I wish I'd never known about half the stuff that's in this textbook, first of all. Yeah. On the bottom of one page of a book that talks about a subject that I cannot communicate to you on the air without being embarrassed and feeling like I'm probably violating your sense of decency. I can't even say what's on the page of this book. And at the bottom of the page is a picture of Lady Gaga. This isn't a textbook for... It's just unbelievable. And the mom says, well, this is really more about college-age kids. Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's see. I'm not totally out of time here. O.J. Simpson, let's see. After waiting 17 years for O.J. Simpson to pay a $9 million wrongful death judgment, Ron Goldman's mother has decided to sell the right to the settlement online. She's put it up for sale on a website called judgmentmarketplace.com, and you can bid on it. She says she'll sell it right now for $1 million. It's a $9 million judgment against O.J. Simpson for the murder of her son and Nicole Brown. The judgment is worth $24 million once you factor in interest that, O.J. hasn't paid. But you only get the money if O.J. pays it. And, of course, O.J. is in prison in Las Vegas where he will probably die a miserable death. He has paid very little of the $33.5 million he owes from the 1997 civil case. I know that we did our best. We gave them about $17,000 when we bought all his stuff and we burned it on this. So we were glad to do our part. I wouldn't touch this judgment with a 10-foot pole because it's not worth a plug nickel, unfortunately. And it is unfortunate. It's not worth anything. From the politics file, a New Jersey man has been charged $9,000 He had to go to the emergency room. He accidentally cut his finger with the claw end of a hammer. That can be pretty ugly. He went to the Bayonne Medical Center, the emergency room there in New Jersey. The nurse practitioner determined that no stitches were necessary, and there was also no x-ray necessary. The total for his bill was nearly $9,000. He says, basically, I got a Band-Aid and a tetanus shot. How could that cost $9,000? Well, the deal is, it's because his insurance company had not negotiated rates with the provider, and he was what they call out of network. It's like roaming charges on your cell phone. You're on the phone for 5 minutes, you get a bill for $47. Well, you were out of network. So this is what Obamacare is going to bring to us. We're all going to be enslaved to a particular geographic area, a particular doctor. And this has nothing to do with Obamacare. This is already the way things are. So just get ready, because with Obamacare, it's only going to get worse. More people are going to die. More people are going to suffer massive loss of finances. It's just going to be ugly. And it's because the suicidal, secular, socialist, heathen children are not only running the country, but they're being allowed to vote. And I'm frankly against all of that. I wish they weren't allowed to vote, because they're ruining everything. In New Jersey, law requires insurers to pay for emergency room treatments whether or not there's an in-network price deal. And so the hospital figures, we'll send them a bill for $9,000. If we collect $150, we'll be happy. But this poor guy, he's freaking out. Finally, from the Domestic Tranquility File, in Philadelphia last week, there was a concert called Philly Support Philly. They're not very creative there in Philly. Philly Support Philly, Peace on the Streets. This was a concert designed, it was being held to promote peace and stem violence in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. While at the concert, a 20-year-old man was shot and killed. Yeah, he got into an argument in the parking lot. Shooter opened fire, and this 20-year-old peace-loving man was pronounced dead at about 2:15 a.m. last Thursday. And at last report, no arrests have been made. That's the state of domestic tranquility in the city of brotherly love, the city named after brotherly love, at a concert in which brotherly love was the entire focus of the concert. Which it just goes to show you, you cannot counterfeit love and make it up and act like everybody's going to love each other. We all need to learn how to love each other. And we all need to admit that the bottom line is we don't know how. And we need someone to teach us. And there is a man who will teach you how to love your brother. There is a man who will teach you how to love your sister, your mother, your father, the man down the street, the guy at the concert who's annoying in the parking lot. You can learn how to love him. There's a man who taught us that there's no greater love than that a man would lay down his life for his friends. And you can learn about that man anytime. You can tune in here to the show. You can tune in with my friends at KGOV.com. You can tune in, go to DenverBibleChurch.com. Get in on some of those resources and learn about the man who knows what Philadelphia really means. And that's it. I'm out of here. Thanks, as always, to my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.